One of the assignments I dreaded most as a child was the first day back at school, what I did on my summer vacation. It seems to me that Rosh Hashanah being the first day back, in a sense, I would like to give you a report. What I did on my summer vacation by Rabbi Brad Artson. This summer, and it should be noted against Marv Selter's advice, I took a trip to Uganda. In May, in this very sanctuary, we ordained the spiritual head of the Abayudaya tribe from the southeastern part of Uganda, a tribe of Africans who about 100 years ago decided that they were Jews. They read the Gospels. It didn't make sense to them. Virgin birth, angelic visitations, crucifixions didn't work for them, but the Hebrew Bible was full of tribes and shepherds and common sense sorts of things. So they kicked out the Christian missionaries, decided that they were Jews, and lived their lives until the time of Idi Amin, the ruthless dictator who attempted to wipe them out and murdered 3,000 of their tribe's members. After Amin was ousted, they realized that they could have all perished and the world would never have known that there were Jews in Uganda. So they contacted the chief rabbinate of Israel and were told not interested. Then they contacted the conservative rabbis in the United States and in Israel, and a group of rabbis flew in, studied with them, and then formally converted the bulk of the tribe. Once most of the tribe's people were recognized as Jewish, then their spiritual leader decided it was time for him to be recognized officially as a rabbi as well. So he contacted a few different rabbinical schools in the United States before finally coming to pay a visit to the Ziegler School up on Mulholland Drive. And there he sat with his brother, who was a member of the Ugandan parliament, and he looked out of the windows of my beautiful office at the hills of Bel Air, and he commented on how the hills of Bel Air reminded him exactly of his home in Uganda. And I said to him, it's amazing how many people drive through here every day without even noticing the obvious. Five years living in Bel Air, 1 year in Jerusalem, he and his family just moved back to Uganda last June. And before he left, he asked me if I would lead his installation. And so I brought a group of five rabbis, some from this area, some from other parts of the country, to travel to Nabegoya Hills to perform his installation. And I want to share with you what transpired, because what happened there has everything to do with what we are doing here today. When we got there, we had been told that we would be participating in the conversion of 100 Africans to Judaism. There were a few locals. There were some people from other parts of Uganda. There were people from South Africa and Nigeria and Ghana and Kenya who would also be joining for the conversion experience. It turned out when we got there, there were 250 people camped out on the hill outside of their main synagogue. So for 3 days, all we did was one Beit Din, one rabbinic court after another, interviewing, making sure they knew enough to be Jewish, and then certifying them for conversion. At this point, the experiences of the rabbis participating diverged. Rabbi Richard Kamras had been trained as a Moel. So for 3 days, his vision of Africa was somewhat different than ours. If you don't get that, ask a neighbor. I'm not explaining it. But for the rest of us, it was extraordinary. A father and a mother and their 12 children sitting in two rows with mom and dad in the front. Dad, of course, answering all the questions because it's a patriarchy like the good old days. And so when dad would start to get it wrong, then the wife would discreetly look at the floor and just whisper something in Lugandan, and dad's sentence would shift right in the middle of a word. It was hard to get the children to speak. They won't speak in their parents' presence. It was very hard to get the women to speak. They won't speak in their husband's presence. I sometimes had to insist on their speaking. African women, you'll be pleased to note, those of you who are supporters of traditional family values, African women still bow before their husband every time they see him. I attempted to explain to Alana, my wife, the way Western culture has been drifting so far from its roots, that this might be a way for us to turn the tide. But she lacks vision in this area. There was a 10-year-old Muslim boy whose parents had given him permission to convert. And so every Friday afternoon, he walked through the jungle for an hour to get from his house to the house of a Jew in the Abu Yudaya tribe so that he could spend Shabbat with other Jews. And then after Havdalah on Saturday night, he would walk in the dark for an hour through the jungle to get back to his Muslim parents' home. They came to support him at his conversion. There were Christians. You should know that in Africa, the primary source for Jewish converts is Seventh-day Adventists and Messianic so-called Jews. The Seventh-day Adventists tell the Africans that they should be observing the Sabbath on Saturday because that's what the Bible says. Then the Africans start to read the Bible and they say, you know, we should also be not eating shellfish, and there's a host of other things we should be doing differently. And they're told, well, if you do that, then you would be a Jew. And the African answer to that is, okay. So there are 1,000 families in Nigeria who have their own congregation. Not one of them is legally Jewish, but they are all identifying themselves as Jewish, practicing Judaism, and seeking to normalize their relationship with the Jewish people. We are in communication with one talented young man named Joseph from Nigeria, who I hope to bring to the rabbinical school so that he can do for the Nigerian Jewish community what Gershom is doing in the Ugandan community. The Lemba tribe in South Africa, a tribe of 3 million people, have the same genetic markers as the Kohanim. You know, they did a test to see what, and they found out that, in fact, most people who claim to be Kohanim actually are. There's a unique genetic marker that they have. The Lemba have it too and claim to be Kohanim. I think we could turn around the demographic challenges facing the Jewish people and significantly improve the quality of our music at the same time. No offense. At the installation, there were 1,500 people in attendance. There were imams and Muslim clerics there to support Gershom. There were priests and ministers and Christian clergy there to support Gershom and his tribe. Since Gershom has been in the United States, he has used his time well. They set up the first healthcare clinic in East Uganda. They've set up the first hydroelectric power. For the first time, that part of the world now has electric power sometimes. So that Gershom is not just a rabbi in the American sense, he is the political authority in that part of the world. During his installation, the regional chieftain spoke, and he decided that I was the chief of the American rabbis. I will ask you, when he comes here, not to say anything. And if we could just not share that part with Rabbi Wolpe, I'd appreciate it. So, halfway through his speech, he turned to me and said, Rabbi, I am bestowing upon you an African chiefly name. So I am now known in Uganda as Walusansa Salango. Walusansa meaning reeds, what grows by the banks of rivers, a plant very important in rabbinic and in African traditions. And Salango means father of twins, which is an obvious sign both of blessing and of sleeplessness. I needed to give him a gift to reciprocate. You understand that when one chieftain presents another chieftain with something, so the next day he had his assistant show up and present me with a leather and wooden African stool with a giraffe painted on the top. This was his chieftainly gift to me. I offered to leave my daughter with him. This would have fetched me two cows in the bargain. But she takes after her mother in her sense of possibilities, so she said no. So when I came back to the States, I ordered a special shofar and a stand, and I had a plaque printed up that said to my brother Walusansa from Rabbi Brad Artson, USA. That's something I thought he could share with his fellow chieftains. As I sat in the installation, I thought about the toxic oppression that has characterized the relationship between the West and Africa for the last 500 years. Slavery and brutality and exploitation have marred the relationships between the West and Africa. And I was so proud of Gershom, and I was so proud of the LA Jewish community. Make no mistake about it, in Eastern Africa, we are known as the community that rose to the challenge of leadership training on their behalf, and then have created all of these opportunities for them to employ themselves gainfully. They have a Muslim, Christian, Jewish coffee cooperative that is now one of the main industries in the region. And that's because of the intervention of this community, of the Los Angeles Jewish community, mobilized by Gershom and his goodness. I thought about what a remarkable world it is that I could travel halfway around the world and I could there have something in common with people with whom I have very little in common. On Saturday afternoon, after services, the entire village gathered under the spreading acacia trees on the hills of Nabugoya, and I taught Torah for 2 hours. You think you're suffering now. And Gershom translated it instantly into Lugandan. 250 converts, Bible thumping on Saturday afternoon, I have become a missionary. But what I realized in speaking to these people is that Torah for them is not entertainment. Torah for them is not identity. It's not ethnicity. Torah for them is quite simply choosing life. When I ask them what their favorite holiday was, like Americans, Ugandans all answer the question by saying Pesach. Passover is every Jewish Ugandan's favorite holiday. But when I ask them, what value do you think Pesach represents? They say something that no North American says. In North America, Satmar, Chabad, Trotskyist, communist, whoever, everybody says the main thing Passover stands for is freedom. Everybody says that, but not a single African. In Africa, what everybody said was that Passover stands for humility, because we were incapable of achieving freedom by ourselves. I asked them, why study Torah? And the two most frequent answers I was given was, first, Torah prohibits theft, and therefore it stops people from stealing. And two, it prohibits people from going to witch doctors and witch doctors are a scourge in Eastern Africa. They get people addicted to terrible drugs. They disrupt families. They are criminal in their interventions. The Torah insulates the Abba Yudaya from this affliction. Interestingly, I run the country's largest introduction and conversion to Judaism program through the American Jewish University. Nobody gives that answer when we ask it here. But for the Abba Yudaya, the Torah is literally choosing life. And so my message for us today is a message that actually goes way, way back. One of my favorite teachers in the world is Rav Sadia Gaon, a Baghdadi authority from the 9th century. Rav Sadia says, Jews are a people only by virtue of Torah. The Abba Yudaya, if you showed them lox and bagels, would not think Jewish. If you showed them hummus with ful, they would not think Jewish. They don't think that Alan Sherman makes you a Jew or a summer in the Catskills. For them, Judaism is not about ethnic humor. It's not about internalized anti-Semitism. It's not about a style of dress. Judaism is a life enlightened by mitzvot, a life spent in the service of God through growth in Torah. And when I brought my daughter there, I brought her to see that a girl in West LA has brothers and sisters all around the world because of the abiding appeal of Torah. On this day of new beginnings, on this day of returning home to your core, I want to remind you of that same message. We are a people by virtue of Torah. We have been given a way of life that is healing and peaceful and good. We have been taught that love is robust and sufficiently determined that it can, with time and persistence, change the world. And the world is desperately in need of healing. So this year, I invite you, like my brother Walusansa, like my friends the Abba Yudaya, I invite you to once again dance the dance of Torah, to once again come home to a life of mitzvot, to once again put God at the center. Shana Tovah.